When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie, and by my good friend, Kyle. Kyle, what's happening this week? Talk to me.
Well, you know, first of all, hi. Secondly, hi. I had a few things happen this week, and we did, which is good.
True.
Let me think. My wife and I just got back from celebrating our 10-year wedding anniversary. Hello.
Wow.
Look out. 10 years. I'm getting old.
Man.
But I say
your,
that because
your marriage is like about to start going through the puberty years there.
Whoa.
It's like a fourth
Easy.
Grader. You've got a fourth
Easy.
Grader of a marriage.
Oh, great. That's probably the least exciting and desirable way to put it. Yes. But we went to Charleston, South Carolina.
Wow.
Okay.
Man, Charleston's nice. That's a nice spot.
Charleston's kind of fun. Are there any South Carolina people out there? Question mark. Are any of our listeners from Charleston? Because I was in your beautiful city. It was so hot, but we had a lot of fun.
Can't be any hotter there than it is here in Texas. But
you know what they say? It's a dry heat in Texas. Huh? Yeah, dude, every time you go out to like Las Vegas, it's like, oh, it's a dry heat. And I'm like, it's dry, but 115 is still 115, guys.
Right.
Like, I get that it's a dry heat. Anyways.
Well,
but
the jokes
also,
here have been that it's like, you know, here in Texas, whenever the ice storm came in, everyone was like, oh, well, how is the Texas? Like, how are they ever going to know that we were going to be hit by this crazy ice storm? So, like, of course, the folks in charge of the energy grid were kind of caught off guard. But now there's all this talk that with the heat, that there are also going to be big potential power outage issues. And so everyone's like, how could they ever know that in June it would be so hot in Texas?
Oh, what a surprise. Maybe you're in one of these apocalypse events. Uh-oh. Look
oh,
out.
Oh, wow.
Look out. Lucky. The other thing that happened to us this week, and if you can't tell, when my tone of my voice changes like that, it's because I start smiling that big. This smile is because your boys, Robbie and Kyle, are going to see Black Widow at a
yes.
pre-screening, an early screening of Black Widow in the theaters. And we thought at one point it was going to have to be, yeah, it was going to have to be digital, which would have been fine, but you and I are such big theater guys, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we've missed going to the theaters. And so this is kind of a fun return to the theaters for us. Black Widow pre-screening and
yeah,
and,
this is the thing I think I'm most excited about, actually.
Let's go. People don't know this about us. We are going to do it together, I think, in Austin.
Yeah.
Which we have never recorded a podcast together to date, people.
It's wild. Well, and like we said a couple episodes ago, we haven't even been in the same room since like 2015. It's so crazy. And now it's going to be such a fun, it'll be a fun reunion and a fun reunion with the MCU in theaters.
Maybe when we actually see each other in person, we'll hate each other. Yeah, we just don't even know it at this point.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, could be. Could be. All right. Even though that is amazing and my anniversary trip was amazing, let's get into episode two. This has been so weird for Robbie and I because we've actually seen the first episode and the second episode this whole time. And so all of you who are on our Slack channel, which has been amazing, and you can find that invitation in our show notes, wherever you get your podcasts. We didn't want to get fully into any theories on there to confirm or deny anything that we already knew because, spoiler alert, obviously, now we know some stuff. This is the stuff we knew.
Right.
And gosh, I had so much fun rewatching it. I can't wait to talk about it. And now finally everything is fair game. It's all fair game.
I know. So we're obviously very excited to talk about episode two of Loki. And we're excited because joining us after that is the creator and head writer of Loki, Mr. Michael Waldron.
Let's go.
Man, that's coming up after our discussion of the episode. But before all of that, a quick word from our sponsor, BetterHelp.
Are you struggling with depression, stress, anxiety, anger, have trouble sleeping? Both Robbie and I believe that it is very important to take care of your mental health, and that's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can connect with them in a safe and private online environment that's so convenient, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. You can send a message to your personal counselor anytime and you will get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions all without ever having to leave your comfortable living room. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling and financial aid is available. BetterHelp is convenient, professional, affordable. Don't believe it? Check out the testimonials posted daily on their website. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. So I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/FFW. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/FFW.
All right, Kyle. So here we are. Let's do it. Loki episode two is called The Variant. If you've watched the episode, you know why that is the title. Last week, we went through the cast and crew, who we were all very impressed with, and the notable addition this week, which again, you will know if you've seen the episode, is Sophia DiMartino, who we will talk about soon. But as of now, welcome, Sophia, to the MCU. We're glad to have you. Kyle, let's jump in.
Yes. Okay, I want to start with a quick disclaimer, if you don't mind.
Yeah, come on.
If you are new to this podcast, Robbie and I have spent a ton of time reviewing these movies and shows. We kind of approach them with a critical eye, and we used to structure episodes with what works and what doesn't work, right? But occasionally, what's happened is we get to one of these shows where the quality is so high that I don't want to beat a dead horse and just come back every week and say, look how good this is. Look how good this is. So I am kind of with this show operating under the principle that the bar has been raised. It is so good. It is high quality. It is excellent. The acting, the chemistry, the dialogue, the humor, the visuals, the music, it's all really, really good. So I'm not going to come back here every week and just beat a dead horse, okay? It's amazing, and I will tell you if I feel otherwise.
I like that. I like that. I feel like that's a good disclaimer moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know me. I'll still probably slip in some high praise. Sure. That's high praise. Yeah, occasionally, you know?
One thing that I do think would be interesting to talk about, it was a discussion you and I were having about the pilot episode versus this episode, where I think you and I figured out that we have our own our own sort of criteria, whether that's a conscious thing or a subconscious thing, by which we evaluate these things. And I think sometimes you tend, and correct me if I'm wrong, tend to lean more towards the quality of the story. And I feel like I am kind of a stickler for like the writing, like the minutia of the writing. And so I bring that up because I thought, I'm with you. I mean, I think that this is such a strong start to a series, and I think I'm still going to stick with what I said last episode, which is I think Loki at this moment is maybe poised to have the top seed of the Disney Plus shows so far. But you know, well, I'm not going to get
careful.
Too. We'll see. I'm saying so far. I know.
Wanda Maximoff is staring at you angrily right now. Be careful. You know how I feel.
It's not great. Yeah, that's true. That's not. I mean, we've seen what happens when she gets angry. But my point in bringing that up is, I did think it was interesting. You know, the pilot was written by Michael Waldron. This episode was not, and I feel like, I don't think it was a downgrade in quality, but I could feel the shift a bit in the writing, and I do think I slightly prefer Waldron's writing. And I think even though way less happened in that pilot, I think I still maybe give the pilot episode the edge. But I think you maybe fall a bit on the other side, right?
Well, it's funny you say that, because guess who's joining our show today? Oh, Michael Waldron, your best friend.
Wow.
Let's go.
That's so true,
teaser.
Man. I'm such a fan. It's going to be so cool to have him on the show.
Yeah, he's coming up soon. I do think that's really interesting. Yes, totally. I think, first of all, we both look at all of those things, right? I try to pride myself on caring about the dialogue and the story and the acting. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. We've talked about this before. Like, the reason you can be more okay with Thor Dark World, got to get it in there, we're contractually obligated, is because the dialogue and the writing itself is actually a huge step up in our opinions over like Thor 1. And it's pretty good in general. It's like, it's a middle tier. I mean, it's up there.
I mean, it's Marcus and McFeely. Like, they're not, you say what you want. They're not bad. I mean, they write good dialogue. They're not bad writers.
Right. Right. And I agree. But because you're more sensitive to that, you're a little bit, again, just a little bit more willing to look past the ridiculousness of the plot. It's just a garbage story, but I'm almost a little bit the exact other way, where I'm like, they are throwing sticks at a guy and making his arms disappear to stop this convergence. It's hard for me to get past that, even if the dialogue is witty, a little bit. Now, again, it's all relative, okay? And I do think that's fair. So I think I enjoyed this episode a little more because I'm a little less sensitive to Michael Waldron's writing not being as influenced here.
Mm-hmm.
Than you are, whereas you were a little bit more like, oh, the dialogue's a little different. That's just interesting, okay? That may explain some of our preferences along the way.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But besides that, to me, this episode was kind of broken into two parts. You had the everything that happens before they go on the mission, all the philosophical dialogue, a ton of the, you know, plot and like mythos work was done there, you know, on what the TVA is and what the timekeepers are doing and all that. And then the back half of it is once they get to the Roxcorp supermarket, then that's kind of part two and what happens from that point on. So, and I'm not going to go strictly linear through this, but let's talk about that first chunk for a second.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to say this last week, okay, but I didn't think it was appropriate, knowing we had seen this episode, but now I'm going to say it. My running theory, and again, we're not a theorizing type speculation show, but my running theory is that there's going to be a massive twist on the timekeepers themselves. Did you get the vibe while watching this that there's a chance they aren't real?
I did.
Like there's a chance it's a Wizard of Oz type thing.
Yeah.
Or if we find out that there is actually people back there, that they're not keeping these realities together like they say they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, I think one of the things that's so interesting about this to me is that Loki from the beginning, from episode one, is asking, well, it's supposed to happen, like, you know, according to whom? Like, it's not as though that's an objective decision to reach. So someone, like, they have their own interests and potentially biases. And I, you know, I think it's interesting because he says in that first episode, like, I want to speak to them God to God. Because, right, like, in a certain context, Loki is a god, and Loki's obviously not infallible. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, are these, if these beings do in fact exist, are they, you know, just some different versions of the kind of quote-unquote gods we've seen in Asgard, or are they much higher kind of cosmic force type beings? Or I've gotten the same sense that you're talking about. Like, I immediately, just because of the way that Renslayer keeps talking about them, she seems almost kind of defensive.
Right.
I keep thinking, like, I feel like that the show wants us to think that there's something up there, you know, and even the, like, the propagandiness of the whole, like, intro video, you know?
And he walks through the courtroom, and there's, like, statues and artwork of these beings that are doing it. And then the key detail for me was Mobius has never met him.
Right.
We're getting the vibe that he's way high up, but he kind of talks to the judge as if he wishes he could meet him. And if Mobius is not okay to meet him, that gives me some weird vibes. Then I thought to myself, if I was a writer for this show, if I was Michael Waldron, you'll hear from him in a second. If I was Michael Waldron, I think to myself, we ask him in the interview, you've had this character who already has this full arc. What would you do with that if you're making a new show now? And I think if I was a writer, couldn't it be kind of fun that Loki, you know, Loki has always been the guy who sides with maybe not the best cause to save himself. He's self-serving in that way.
Right.
But he often ends up aligning with the quote-unquote, like, wrong cause. What a fun take this would be to have, let's set up a TVA as being like these police that are doing all the right thing as far as keeping the entire universe together. And Loki, who's a villain, who's often doing the wrong thing and mischievous and siding with the wrong people. What if over the course of the show, those kind of flop? Like, what if we find out that there's more of an evil or mischievous agenda from the timekeepers, and it's up to Loki to end up, like, reining that in or saving the day almost?
I love that idea because it would make sense, right? Because it's ultimately him being... I mean, it's a bit of what we saw, what you and I talked about in the episode on Infinity War, where if you're just finding the podcast, we did kind of a brief Road to Loki week where we went through and looked at Loki's role in the films that he's appeared in up until now. And yeah, it was that kind of like, whenever he stood up to Thanos, you know, it seemed equal parts maybe him doing that on behalf of Thor, but also sort of the level of, at this point, he was probably looking at the board and realizing that there wasn't a world in which, like, Thanos wins and he also comes out on top anymore, at least. And so you see his motivations kind of align. You get the same things in Ragnarok sort of towards the end to some degree. But you're right. I think it is interesting, like, if he is still motivated, especially at this stage, right? Because this is a less, like, a Loki that hasn't had that growth necessarily. And if he is still motivated, like, primarily by his own ego, and he's coming into this space where, by contrast, I mean, he's constantly being made to feel small. And, you know, he's thought of himself as kind of all important, and he's being told now that he's just one of a million different versions of himself and that he's, you know, a pussycat, as Mobius said, then yeah, like, there is, it's funny because he could wind up doing the exact right thing, but for the same reasons that Loki's always done anything.
So regarding the timekeepers, though, I think it's going to end up being one of these WandaVision type things with Agatha, where it's like,
right,
do they set it up to where it becomes so obvious that maybe the timekeepers aren't real, that the twist is going to be they actually are real and they're doing what they're saying they're doing? Or are they going to try to keep it concealed enough that the twist being, oh, it is like a Wizard of Oz, no one's back there, or that it's an evil person back there?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Either way, it could still be a twist depending on how they do it.
Well, and I do think it has to be said that there's a lot of King the Conqueror speculation out there.
Yes, I was going to say that.
Oh, nice. Look at you. Where I think Judge Renslayer is obviously the, you know, longtime love interest of sorts of King
you
the Conqueror.
You say obviously. Obviously. Well, not for anyone who's just watching the movies, bro.
Fair. It's the thing, though. Once you get into this world, you've got everyone coming in with, like, PhDs in comic lore.
I even knew that, so yes.
Yeah, right. But and so I think a lot of people, given that we know Kang the Conqueror is showing up in the next Ant-Man film, I think a lot of people are seeing this. And as we referenced last week, right, there is a sense in which the Loki team is considering this show to be Judge Renslayer's origin story. So you could see why people are thinking this might end with her meeting Kang or becoming involved with Kang. And a lot of people are extrapolating that to mean, well, maybe there aren't any timekeepers and it's just Kang, who is this kind of despot across timelines. You know, he's primarily an Avengers villain in the comics, and the idea is sort of in various ways throughout the Marvel continuity, he is always trying to kind of come through time and, as his name suggests, conquer.
Kang going to be this show's Mephisto?
I think he will be. I think the question is it going to end the same way, which is to say, with kind of a thud for all the folks that were speculating about the fly there in Agatha's house.
Myself included.
Right. Yep. Or, yeah, is it going to actually lead into something? I mean, this one feels more grounded, right, because we do know for sure that this character is set to appear. I mean, he's been cast in the Ant-Man film. However, like, the question there is, you know, as we talked to Michael about in this episode, you know, I don't know. It seems like a lot of this kind of came from Michael and Kate. So it's hard to tell, like, if they wrote this story, like, were they collaborating a lot with the Ant-Man folks? Like, is, you know, it's like, it's always hard to tell how much of the kind of bigger picture stuff, because like we've said, I mean, Loki seems more big picture focused, but.
Well, and one of my big takeaways now that we're three Disney Plus shows in is that they want to use these shows to really, really hyper focus on these characters and give them development, as you'll hear from Michael in a second. And so fandom, I think, a lot of times wants to make these even bigger than maybe the story itself should be, right? They want the cameos. They want Kang. They want Doctor Strange and WandaVision. But then, like, Kevin Feige comes out later and specifically says why they didn't bring Doctor Strange in.
Right.
And so I just, there's always going to be a balance there. You know, there's going to be a fight there of, like, how much bigger world stuff do they do versus, hey, let's keep this about Loki and Mobius.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, did you see the comment that Malcolm Spellman made after the Falcon and the Winter Soldier finale?
No. No.
So I thought it was really interesting because he talked about how it was sort of his commentary on just the way the MCU works in terms of the process with Kevin and other folks, like, higher up the food chain. He had wanted Spider-Man to make an appearance in the finale and had tried to write him in, which does make sense, right? I mean, you're in New York, like, it would, in timeline wise, that would kind of work. But Kevin's response, I really appreciate, which was like, well, why? Like, how is that going to further this story or Spider-Man's story? And because there wasn't a real answer, they were like, well, yeah, Spider-Man's not coming in. And I mean, I'm sure there are also other issues in terms of getting Tom Holland on set and having to pay Tom Holland and that kind of stuff. But I do think there's something to be said for not just bringing stuff in for the sake of bringing it in, but everything hyper, hyper intentionally. And I respect that a lot.
One last note on the timekeepers and the bigger MCU stuff we're talking about. A couple listeners reached out that they had concerns about the first episode, about, like, did they kind of gloss over some of the time travel stuff with Endgame, and they're so bothered by kind of what Loki's bothered by, which is, like, why would the timekeepers come in for Loki taking the test track, but they don't come in for the Avengers time travel, or they don't come in during Thanos' run, or they don't intervene when Doctor Strange is looking through all their things. And look, two things. I think that is a frustration you're supposed to feel. That's what Loki right. is feeling. That's the whole point. And if they don't explore that more, then obviously it's a failure of the show. I think the whole point is they're going to totally set up agree. Who is determining this. So just stay patient on that front, right? If they don't get there, we'll crush it because they can't just introduce that stuff. But I think that's going to be the whole premise, okay? Like I said, I thought this episode was kind of split into two parts. And I thought what was really interesting was the character growth we got from Loki in the first half, and then just some of the philosophical talk we get in the first half of this episode. You know, you and I last week talked about how, hey, they start introducing some really heady questions. But we were kind of saying that with this episode in mind, because here's where they really get into it. I mean, they literally sit down at the lunchroom and have a crazy predestination versus free will discussion. And it gets really spiritual and philosophical there. And as we heard in the press conference, that's not something that the writers are avoiding here. I mean, they're playing into that on purpose.
Well, and a couple things. One, you know, for fans of Michael Waldron's work on Rick and Morty and also Community, that's very up his alley. Like he's spent a lot of time towing that line between comedy and philosophy almost, like what you're saying. I mean, like there are episodes even of Rick and Morty, which is, you know, you think of that as kind of an Adult Swim, like haha, like crude animated show for folks especially that haven't seen it. But it is like philosophically very intensive, and you see his leanings towards that. And I love that the MCU is willing to embrace that so quickly into this show. And the other thing I was going to say that I think makes that work well, because you can imagine a world in which, I mean, that's a big swing that may not totally hit. And Hiddleston and Owen Wilson were talking in that press conference about how so many of these scenes, they're so long, and it's just dialogue, like where it almost felt like they were saying it felt like a stage production, where it's just two people like waiting for Godot kind of a thing. And that's also like a pretty bold choice creatively, because if you go back and watch like your average MCU film, I mean, it's not that often that you just have a conversation between two characters taking place for that long, you know, for a scene. And it works because like what we said, like Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston's chemistry works so well, but also the subject matter is so interesting.
And it works really well here because it's an actual TV show for the first time ever. This is why they say they finally now have time to do some of this stuff.
Right.
But they don't have, like, I think about like Infinity War. So much had to happen in Infinity War. They don't have time for a conversation like this. And that's just fair. They don't. Think about how fast that movie bounces from scene to scene.
Right.
You know, they knew they had to get that all in, by the way, to perfection. I love it. But I'm saying this is very different. What's also interesting to me is I can see how these kind of conversations would not be every fan's vibe. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah,
like
not everybody
would be into this, but for some reason it's my vibe. It's Kyle's vibe. Like I could watch this for hours, and I'm finding myself realizing like, this is the kind of stuff I love the MCU doing with these shows, but I can see why some people would be turned off by it. It's the same reason why I loved WandaVision so much, because it played with that idea of grief and depression. And I didn't have an answer for it. It was just making me sit in it. And I liked that. And now here I am, like, I don't have an answer off the top of my head on what I believe about predestination or free will. But and I'm uncomfortable sitting in it. But that's the point, and that's what I like. That's what I like. So that's my scene.
No. And not only that, like I like the way it's looped into the MCU. Like what you were just saying about people being uncomfortable with, oh, well, like why were all these things allowed to happen that seem to be like more egregious offenses against the sacred timeline? Like that, I think is the, like, that's the tension. Like it's not just the tension from us saying, oh, well, like, is that like a plot hole that they didn't deal with that? I think it's like, it's better than that. It's the tension of like why are these things supposed to happen? According to who? What makes something good or bad? Like, why was, like, why was Thanos allowed to happen?
Right. But that's why it's so important to remember that as of now, we're not told that the timekeepers are good or bad.
Exactly.
Like, we always think through the lens of, well, it seems like Thanos was a bad thing, so they should stop that. But these people are not there to decide what's right or wrong.
Right.
They're just determining what is the sacred timeline. But here's where it gets sticky then. In determining what's the sacred timeline, who is doing that? And why do they determine that is the timeline? Like, why is that the timeline that does have to keep going?
Right.
Why can't the other ones keep going?
What's the criteria there?
Right. Do they have an agenda then? These gods, right? Oh, that's what's so fascinating to me.
Well, and I think something that you said, I forget whether you brought this up last episode or whether you and I talked about this offline, but talking about how Michael Waldron and Kate Herron and the other folks behind this show were really, you know, they've said that they took into account the amount of kind of fan investment in the Infinity Saga, which I think, you know, we kind of think of as the main Marvel story that we've all watched unfold. And I think to some extent, a lot of this still feels a bit like epilogue to that. And that raises a whole new element to this, right? Because we're all coming in caring so much about this timeline that we're now all being told was potentially manipulated into happening by these beings, like by what we know currently, right? And you're right, and this could change. But like that, I think, makes everyone feel a little weird because it's this like thing that we put a lot of stock in. And now it's like, well, were there realities in which Cap didn't stand up to Thanos there at the end? Like these moments that we think of as like huge moments, like they're playing with us there because it's making you think like, did anyone have a choice or was all this like, or were they just chess pieces on a board?
Right. Which is a debate that philosophers in real life have been having for years since
for
Socrates.
Millennia. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So like, That's crazy in and of itself. We don't know the answer. And then B, I think when I brought up, I felt uncomfortable with the Infinity Stones. I think the show knows I'm going to feel uncomfortable with making fun of the Infinity Stones. And I think a lot of our audience felt uncomfortable with it. And I think that's the point. That's what's so crazy is like, I think we're going to get an answer. And knowing that Michael and Kate and Kevin are so sensitive to that and to the Infinity Saga, I still think we're going to get a satisfactory answer. They may find a way to elevate the stones at the end of all this. I know that sounds insane, but like there might just be some stuff still coming.
Right.
And last thing, I just also love this tension, like I said last week with Arrival, the film, where Loki now knows what happens to himself in the sacred timeline. And he's seen that. And what's that dynamic like? Like how worthless does your life kind of feel when you know how it all plays out? And then it's like Lost, where is it, can you go back and change it then? Or is it whatever happened? Like somehow, if this version of Loki, who is now aware of the TVA, got back to the 2012 version somehow, which we don't think is possible right now, can he change it? Or is whatever he does already written? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's just insane. That's literally what season 6 of Lost was all about.
Well, and I mean,
did they cause the event or by them trying to not cause it, do they end up causing it?
Right. I mean, well, that's one of the things Michael talks about here at the end of our episode is the, you know, the way that Marcus and McFeely introduced time travel in the MCU. I mean, like, If you're following those rules, I mean, you can't, like, because it goes back to the whole Hulk thing that Waldron clearly, like, you know, he talks about watching those scenes over and over again from Endgame and making sure that they're playing by the same time travel rules. And not to say they couldn't twist that. And, I mean, introducing the timekeepers definitely provides the opportunity to do that. But it is, right, I mean, because technically if Loki were to go back, I mean, they can't change anything that happened necessarily. But then again, I don't know, maybe, because now they have these,
That's why time travel is hard for our human brains to wrap our minds around. Like, that's not a new concept that it's hard for us to figure out. That's why there's been so many movies about it. I love it so much. Four really, really quick things I'm just going to mention before we turn the page to the back half of the episode, okay? Which is that, man, it was still really funny to me. Like, the candy, you don't have candy on Asgard? Line was so funny, and I literally laughed out loud to myself when Loki's doing the demonstration with the salad. He's like, no, that's not Asgard. That's my lunch.
Right.
like Owen Wilson's delivery of all that is so funny. It's really funny. It's like, oh, come on. He's like, okay, sorry. It's a bad metaphor, but he's like, no, but I wanted to eat that. Don't do that. I laughed a lot. That's my first thing. My second little quick thing, too, is that I love that they're still finding ways to work in character development for Loki with him, for example, reading the destruction of Asgard to work in this emotional moment for a second there for him to see that 9,000, whatever it was, 719 people died.
Right. Which, by the way, I mean, talking about like enhancing past moments, having rewatched Ragnarok fairly recently, I don't think that you pick up on that from the film.
Yes. I think Ragnarok, as unbelievable as it is for the most part lighthearted. Mm-hmm. So like when they're destroying Asgard as a planet, is it fair to say that I don't feel that loss that much as a viewer? Like that is not the highest part of my priority. Which I want to save Asgard, the people. Like Asgard's not a place, we get it. But like, now this is not retconning, but like it's adding some emotional investment to the loss of that planet that I guess I had a little bit, but now just enhancing it.
No, I mean, that's a common criticism of the film, is people say that it's a moment that should be really meaningful, and there's kind of a one joke too many in between, you know, Hulk jumping up to take down Surtur and then the Korg line. And I've always been all right with it, because I think in some ways Taika's doing that intentionally for reasons we talked about in our Ragnarok episode, which you can go check out. But no, I'm with you. It was never meant to be like a very, very heavy kind of loss moment, like what you get in, for instance, Civil War. It's not meant to play that way, but here it injects some of that in, which I always really appreciate. In the same way we talked about last week with kind of the refocused look at what Loki does in the Dark World in terms of accidentally leading curse up to his mom.
Right.
You know, that. So I think it's the same kind of thing. And again, that brings me back to what we always want from these projects and what I'm just really happy with Loki for doing so far, which is not disregarding or disrespecting the work that's been done already by the Russos and by Taika Waititi and by all kinds of other people beforehand. But kind of
what they did with the Infinity Stones, but yes.
No, maybe. But I'm saying, okay, we'll see.
Keep going,
but
sorry.
My point is, there's a, you know, like you can see, because we've talked about how Waldron has said that he's viewing this as a new chapter. He's viewing it as a way to sort of push the envelope. And you could see a world in which they would say, like, okay, look, you know, what's done is done. We're going to kind of do our own deal. And I respect the fact that they want to honor the DNA of this universe. And rather than do the cheap or easy thing, which I think would just be kind of scrapping it or playing it for laughs and moving forward, I like that they're doing a balance of like, let's kind of mine the history itself that's there and show that we value that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my last two quick things. I loved the music here. I felt like the music was actually a step up from episode one. I mentioned on last week's episode that I felt a little off with the music at times, even though I loved it. There's a couple times where it was just kind of jarring for me. Mm. This was not the case here. I loved it. I get such Stranger Things vibes with the synths and the music, but then also going through a superstore that's like losing power, just felt very Stranger Things vibes. And my last thought really quickly was kind of tied back to the predestination versus free will. I also love that tiny bit where they talked about, what do you believe in? Like, it's real because I believe in it. He talked about how, okay, everything Mobius just said about the TVA sounds ridiculous, but right. he believes in it, therefore it's real. But then Mobius tosses it back on him and says, well, everything Loki you're saying sounds ridiculous, frost giants and space and Odin, right? right? So like, but you believe it, so it's real. And that's fascinating to me for two reasons. One, it's again this argument that faith in all different faiths across the world has had where it's like, okay, yeah, you believe that this God created people or created this. Okay, that sounds ridiculous. But then on the other side, you're saying, well, you evolved from a cell that evolved to a monkey, which evolved to a person. So that sounds ridiculous. My point is, whatever right. you believed in is real to you, right? And that's it. And then what I love about this show is they're not necessarily taking a side. They're just showing right. you the discussion, which is interesting. So that was my four quick things.
No, well, and I think that's what's so interesting is like they're teeing up some big questions, and I'm curious to see if the show remains content, which, by the way, I'm totally fine with, to hang out in that tension, or if there's going to be an attempt at a resolution, not of the story, but of those kinds of questions.
Right.
Like that's, I think, what I'm in some ways most curious about kind of moving on from this episode. Although there are a lot of other things that came up here in the back half of this right. episode that we have to talk about in terms of answering questions.
Right. So just quickly, then they go to Rocks Corp. Well, first of all, Loki figures out, being Sherlock Loki, this cool thing with Apocalypse is that right before an apocalyptic event, nothing you do changes the variance or the timeline because it's all going to get erased anyways. It's like basically being naturally reset, which I love that right. explanation. And I loved how Loki figured it out. It felt really detective, like film noir type stuff. It was really fun for me like get to the bottom of that. So they get to the bottom of that and figure out that the only time these two events intersect is in Alabama in, I think it's what, 2050. And so they go to Rocks Corp, which I have to ask you, is that a shout out to Roxxon Energy Group, which I know from my Miles Morales game. Shout out, Evan Narciss. that's how I know that. So hold on, before I ask you that question, they then have some crazy stuff happen where we meet, spoiler alert, Lady Loki, as people were theorizing, which again, Robbie and I knew, so it was hard for us to join in the theories on that. And we see this crazy cliffhanger climactic ending, one of my favorite endings thus far, where she sets off all these reset charges but sends them to different places.
Yeah.
And then just escapes through the doorway, and the whole TVA is left scrambling because all these multiverse timelines are branching out and they're screwed. And then we still see Loki be mischievous, run away. Which is such a huge thing because all that trust that we felt like they had built up between Loki and Mobius now feels like it's gone again.
Right.
So where is that going to go? So all of that happens, and here's my questions for you. Let's talk about this. Okay, here's what I was left with. Why does Lady Loki hate the TVA so much in the first place? And like, how did she become aware of all this to want to start doing this?
That's a great question. I feel like that's what we're supposed to be asking. I think in some ways, like, if every Loki, as Mobius says, is kind of essentially the same with slight variations, it kind of makes sense that just by nature, a Loki would be opposed to something like the TVA. I mean, like, I think there's even a line in this episode where Loki says that the TVA is just like, you know, they're just like the Asgardians. And if there's one thing that Loki hates, it seems to be this fellow Asgardian. So I think it would make sense that, like, it's almost, I mean, it's an authority, but it's an even like greater and through a certain lens, more oppressive authority than the Asgardians.
So because she exists kind of outside of time, if you will,
now,
this could
at
least theoretically be an alternate version of Loki that has in the future sometime or whatever done something that, just like this Loki, got in trouble with the TVA. That's how she became aware of it, right? And then decided, I want to take it down some other time elsewhere.
Well, and that's what's interesting to me is then you start getting into like how some of these alternate Lokis even exist, like based on the time travel and kind of multiverse rules that they're setting out. Like we learned that there were initially, right, like infinite multiverses, which is kind of the prevailing multiversal theory, but then that they were all brought into this one timeline. So then it's like, is the main timeline Loki always supposed to be the Loki that we've known? And if that's true, then how do you even have a Loki that looks totally different, that is a woman, that's come from clearly like a right. different story? Like, how does that even get, I mean, was there a point at which she escaped before that timeline was pruned? I guess.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. A few of our listeners had the thought, like, what if what we were taught about the timekeepers, you know, controlling all these multiverses to go into one sacred timeline, like that exists outside of time, kind of, right? So what if that's actually in the future? Like, what if we haven't seen that yet? Like, what if we are in the multiversal phase and that's happening? Oh,
man, that's trippy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You can get crazy with it. And then my second question, as a follow-up to what I said earlier, is the Roxcorp thing supposed to tie into a greater MCU thing, or is that just a fun Easter egg?
I think it has to. What I'm curious about, I mean, so Roxxon is kind of the go-to evil corporation in the Marvel universe, in the Marvel Comics universe. And I thought that was used to great effect in the Miles Morales video game, which, like how I was saying earlier, we interviewed Evan Narciss a couple weeks ago, who was the head writer on that game. So if you're curious, you should go listen to that episode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the really interesting things, since we're talking about Loki, is in recent years, you know, Jason Aaron wrote this fantastic run of Thor comics starting in 2012 and ending in 2019. And that is seemingly the basis for the upcoming Thor Love and Thunder film. I mean, everything that we've heard about that so far, the villain, the fact that Natalie Portman is supposed to make an appearance as Thor, that's all straight from Jason Aaron's run. Another thing that's from Jason Aaron's run, another villain that I think in terms of kind of modern villains has really made his mark is Dario Auger, who is the CEO of Roxxon in the comics. And he also has the ability to turn into a Minotaur.
what an ability. Right, wow.
Right. It actually winds up being such a great villain initially to Thor, the Thor we know, and then kind of even more so to Jane Foster Thor. And so I raise that just to say, like, the fact that we're in Loki world, the fact that we have Love and Thunder coming, I know a lot of people have wondered if that villain, if that sort of storyline and relationship is coming down the pipe, and that's what it had me wondering. But I do have to answer your question, I do have to believe that at any rate, even if all of that is way too far afield, that Roxxon will make a legitimate appearance.
Isn't Gore the God Butcher also some kind of like animal of some sort?
Gore the God Butcher is an alien.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a human. That's a whole.
I didn't know if it was going to be an army of Minotaurs. Film,
but no. I mean, I would love, you know, the more Minotaurs, the better, as far as I'm concerned. But
obviously,
I am. You know, the thing that I'm so curious to see how a lot of this stuff moves forward, because it just seems like what we're mining are some of, it's a combination of some of my favorite moments in comics of the last decade or so, but then also we have these really creative folks coming in that are clearly bringing their own ideas to bear. But I am, before I forget, you know, as long as we're talking about corporate stuff here, I've got to put in my annual, biannual plug to just say, like, if we're going to have like a crazy evil corporation, I just want Marvel to give Justin Hammer back to me. Just once. I just want a little bit more of that Sam Rockwell, Justin Hammer. Is that too much to ask for, Kyle?
You know I love Justin Hammer. I mean, bro, I'm higher on Iron Man 2 than most people are. So, okay, not that high on it. Easy, everybody out there who just judged me and thought I'm not a critic anymore. Relax.
They're like, never mind. Turning this podcast off.
Yeah. Shut it off.
They like Thor the Dark World and Iron Man 2. Zero credibility.
Yeah, that's true. The only movies we bring up every time. And Captain Marvel, throw that in there too. Okay, my last question. I kind of want to end it here. Like, in your gut, what did you believe Loki was actually doing during this entire thing? Like, do you believe that he's making character developments to turn towards the good and help Mobius because they're becoming friends? And then that ending in that case would just be another shift of, hey, I need to be self-serving. I'm realizing I'm in danger here, so I'm going to do what I can to protect myself by running away. Or do you think he truly has a plan this entire time to try to overthrow the TVA ever since he's found out how quote-unquote powerful it is? Like, I can't get a read on it, and I know that's the point. But yeah. I'm curious, what's your state of Loki after episode 2?
So I think my gut says that he is following her more out of a curiosity than out of a betrayal of the TVA. Not that he feels necessarily like loyalty, but I do think, like, I like to think that he does feel some loyalty to Mobius, at least. Like, that relationship seemed to be real, although, right. I mean, you know, obviously that's the whole thing. I mean, the whole thing, like, that's what made that, like, this episode was so well constructed, because the whole moment that we got at the very beginning was kind of a microcosm for the episode, where, like, he's going and he's helping, but then he gives the whole kind of spiel and Mobius is like, oh, no, never mind, he's lying. And then he's like, his commentary is like, well, you know, part of being an effective trickster is relying on the fact that everyone knows you're a trickster. You know, you expect the expected. Right. And so it's like that's played out across this episode as a whole. And so it leaves you basically asking that question, like, is he doing the thing that Loki always does, where he's the most, you know, reliable backstabber? Or is the growth that we think we saw in the very end of episode 1 actually taking root? Like, is he chasing her down because he's trying to stop her, maybe?
In a way, is it kind of like the Joker, like a long con? Is this the longest con? Or is he kind of morphing just to save his butt, and he would be willing to help Mobius if it's beneficial to him, which is kind of what I think it is, more than a master plan. But we'll see. You know, I think this is actually so fitting that we hear from Michael now, because if you enjoyed this episode, you're going to want to hear from this guy. I mean, this is the guy, Michael Waldron, who wrote Loki. He's writing Doctor Strange too. So talk about tying in Loki and WandaVision, right? And I think based on what we know about him, he's going to just be a key figure in general in the MCU going forward. And we had a blast talking to him.
Yeah.
If it's your thing, don't forget, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can watch this upcoming interview. Not that you have to turn up the podcast, but if you want to actually see his expressions and our expressions and all that, it's on YouTube. Just search Friends From Work, search Michael Waldron on YouTube, and you should be able to find it there.
I mean, Kyle's a pretty handsome guy too, so like, you're going to want to see that.
So if you just want to look at me and Robbie while we're talking, that's fine too. But without further ado, here's our conversation with Michael Waldron. All right, everyone. Today, our very special guest is the talented, the legendary Michael Waldron. Let's go.
Legendary.
Michael, welcome to Friends From Work.
One episode of a show out in the world.
You're already legendary.
One of those immediately iconic things.
Yeah. All right. We'll see how that works out.
Michael, we are so excited to have you joining us. One of the things we always like to start off with when we get the chance to have folks on is we like to ask what your history with Marvel was in terms of comics, watching cartoon shows, watching the movies, like prior to now working in the MCU and quickly kind of becoming a key component of the MCU. Mm-hmm.
did you sort of already have a Marvel fandom, or is that something that you came to a bit later?
I was a huge fan of the X-Men cartoons in the 90s. I feel like I wasn't like obsessed with comics as a kid, but it was those X-Men Saturday morning cartoons. And then like the X-Men games, the like arcade style co-op games.
Oh yeah. Those rule.
That were awesome. And that was kind of my big, you know, and it's like at the time, I mean, I grew up in the 90s, so it's like probably DC was more like, I remember watching that, the old Captain America movie as a kid and being like, what is this? This is crazy. So not a huge Marvel guy. I've talked about this before in other interviews, but I was a big wrestling fan, and I do think there's a lot of similarities in just like the serialization, you know, the heroes and villains of it all. So that was kind of my fandom as a kid.
Okay,
I'm curious about this. You've been a writer for a long time. You've written for Rick and Morty and all these other things. What's the challenge, the benefit of taking a character like Loki, who's already had, you know, a story, a character arc, a 6-movie thing? What is that like? Is that fun? Is it good to work with that? Or do you wish you could have a fresh start on a take?
No, I think in this case, it's amazing. It's time, you know, because I love the character and it's Tom Hiddleston. What character, what combination of character and actor in the MCU is more fun to write for than Loki? And in this case, he's so beloved. There's 10 years of like real investment in him. There's a reason they keep bringing him back to life after his many deaths. in this case, no, that was a pleasure. And it's, you know, Tom himself is a resource too, because he's been building this character for so long. Mm-hmm. So makes my life easy. And also creatively, it's exciting because even though it's not a new character, it does feel new in the sense that it's a big blockbuster villain that suddenly you're doing 6 episodes on. You're just getting to go deep in a way that you never have with any character in the MCU maybe. And so I was really fulfilled by that.
Well, it's interesting you say that about going deeper with that character. Cause one thing that I think has in my mind separated Loki so far from the prior to Disney Plus shows is that not only is it going, I mean, really deep into Loki and Loki's story, I mean, from the get go, but also feels more ambitious in terms of what you're trying to do to the wider universe and sort of playing some with the rules, maybe more so than I think any single project has, at least in a while. Was that something that you always were kind of hoping to do with this project, or is that something you kind of stumbled upon as you were writing Loki?
I mean, I think we were... You know, myself philosophically and our writing staff and really our whole creative team, we were trying to push the envelope to the extent that was possible. You know, we didn't just want to make the Loki show, like which is just to say, like, it would have been really easy, I feel like, to just mail this in because it's like, it's Loki. It's a TV show with Loki with time travel. Like, in some ways, it's hard to mess up just because of how good Tom is. And so we wanted to take chances, surprise people, do something bold, do something that felt like not just a great superhero show, but really felt like great television, like the best, you know, the some of the best TV that people love watching. And so, I think whatever we're doing as it relates to the MCU, just, you know, that's all wrapped up in our own ambition for this show's importance to that broader universe.
This is something I have no idea about, and you're going to laugh at. the product we see What percentage of that is you? What percentage of that is Kate? What percentage of that is Kevin? Like, when you come up with an idea, do you have to bounce it off both of them? Did they bounce it off you? Like, how does that work? How does the collaborative effort work?
It's such a collaboration. I mean, it's that answer changes depending on whatever. Every project is a zillion different creative decisions. Melded together, and that answer would be different for every one of those creative decisions. You know, I was on first kind of with my writing staff, figuring this whole thing out, quarterbacking, figuring out the story and writing the scripts. And then Kate came on, and as production was, you know, as that became the next phase, and, you know, then she and I really became partners, you know, shaping the creative and, you know, also just making sure we could shoot the thing that it was possible to shoot it. But also she had such great ideas, and she was coming in with fresh eyes, which was very valuable to me because we'd been so entrenched in something very specific. It's just easy to get lost in the weeds in this. And then together, and Kevin's always part of all those conversations. He's our collaborator in all of that. And then as you head into production and as that go, you know, it's like in this case, it's me passing the baton to her, and she becomes the quarterback of everything. But the writer, myself, or in this case, it was somebody on my staff, Eric Martin, was there on set while I was doing Doctor Strange. You know, we're still there as things are being rewritten and shaping the creative together. So, I mean, it really is a collaboration. Mm. It's not show running like a traditional TV show. Like, Kate is the captain of the ship during production and post. And I mean, you see how good the show is. It's like her and I had a really great friendship, and in this case, it just really clicked and worked.
Did you know each other before this, or was this the first?
No,
time you
we
met?
Didn't. We met when she pitched briefly, and then we really met each other at D23, as we were about to go on stage to talk to 8,000 people. And we're looking at each other like, what the hell do we say? And then the next thing we know, we're being shuttled through a 2-hour press line, which I had never done before. And we like met the dogs from Lady and the Tramp, and we kept looking at each other. We were like, this is weird. And I guess it's just going to get weirder and weirder. So we've had a fun, interesting ride together.
We got the chance to attend the virtual press conference, I guess, about a week ago. And you were there, as was Kate and Tom and a bunch of other folks. But one thing that I thought was really interesting as sort of the resident comics reader on the podcast is Tom was rattling off all these names of comics creators and not all big names, right? Like folks that he had clearly at some time or another done his homework. And I was curious, are there any certain, I don't know if you yourself spent time with these comics, but are there certain eras, certain runs that you felt were more influential than others? Or did you see this as something really totally set apart from anything done in the comics world?
Yeah, I was excited. Like Tom mentioned, Daniel Kibblesmith, who's great.
Yeah,
He was just a great dude. And he wrote a really great run of Loki that was inspirational. For us, it's like that was kind of coming out as we were writing our show, but there was some good stuff in there that I may or may not have ripped off happily. The Kid Loki run was cool only because it was just that was although it's totally different than Loki in the TVA, it was a story of a version of Loki kind of being judged for things he didn't do, you know, the burden of destiny weighing down on you, and this question of, can I change who I am, or are you meant to become this? So it's like that was spiritually, I think, a very I read that as I was early on, as I was kind of figuring out my own way into the show. And that was inspirational for me.
Well, you feel that here, no doubt. By the time this comes out, two episodes will have been aired. So people will be seeing this by now. We've seen both the first two. Obviously, we're getting into multiverse type stuff, timeline type stuff. Like, how much research did you have to do on what the MCU has already done with that? Like, did you guys have to dive into Endgame, the rules there, all that stuff? I'm sure you're aware by now that the Marvel fan community is hyper aware of every tiny little detail at this point. So
yeah, of course. I mean, we had a giant binder of comics that related to this stuff in the writer's room. The Marvel executives who were on the show are very plugged in to all of that stuff as well. And so they're authorities on that. And it's like, and if we have a question, if they don't know the answer, they can go straight to the top and get you an answer. So that's helpful. My writer's assistant on the show, Ryan Kohler, I kind of charged him with being the keeper of the comics and of the mythology. So like anytime we need to know, like, all right, is there any precedent for this in particular, whatever, we could just, all right, Kohler, what is that? And he could always rattle it off for us. So, you know, you've got to become an expert, certainly in all the rule. Yeah. And on Endgame and everything, like right. I had to really understand, watch that scene with the Ancient One, and with, you know, Smart Hulk explaining time travel to Scott. Yeah. You know, you watch those over and over and over again, because that is how our audience understands time travel in the MCU. Mm-hmm. That's the canon. That's how the Avengers understand time travel. That's the foundation of the rules in this show. And so we were just trying to build upon that. And we'll see how we did. It's all said.
Well, one of the things I really appreciated, and Kyle and I talk about how the MCU at its best does this really well, I think, especially with some of the kind of phase three stuff, in that it not only moves the ball forward, but if you can go back and even improve upon some things that have come before, like, I think, you know, Endgame, which maybe makes sense because it was Marcus McFeely, sort of really enhance the significance of Thor the Dark World to the overall timeline. But I felt like I really appreciated what y'all did with that scene there with the Sorcerer Supreme and Bruce specifically, because I think one of the things, I mean, Endgame was 3 hours and you know, I don't know that they had a ton of extra time to sit in it too long. So you really didn't have a lot of time or really a chance there to explore the nuances and the implications. And even some of the questions I came away from that movie with on that front, I think y'all have already done a really good job of addressing head on and even kind of expounding upon.
Well, thank you. And yeah, we'll see. We'll try to keep a high batting average. You know, I'm a fan. I'm a critical fan. I like to look online and read and scrutinize things and pick things apart. So I tried to be our show's biggest critic, be the enemy of the film or the enemy of the picture, so to speak, all the way through, because, and, you know, and provide satisfying answers to all these questions. I think we did a good job, but look, let's get the whole series out and see what people, let's see what people think.
Two quick ones for me. If you could write for any MCU character that you are not writing for, what would it be? Who would it be, I guess?
Somebody asked me that before and I didn't even have a good answer. My answer was all, it's like, it's hard when your answer literally is Loki. I like Nebula. Yeah. I like Nebula.
Oh wow.
I like villains who have a fraught some trauma in their past and a reason to be a smart ass and have their guard up.
That's a deep cut. That's not where I thought you were going. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, Nebula's pretty cool.
what can you tell us about Doctor Strange without being shot now? Without being sniped?
Let me just tell you how it
is. We know the sniper somewhere.
I'll tell you the whole thing. It's cool. It's cool. Cool movie.
It's cool. Michael it's Waldron.
Yeah. That's good. That'll get a lot of things. I mean, look, it's a Sam Raimi movie. That's what I keep, and it really is. You know, this is Sam Raimi's return to big superhero movies, and I think everything that you might want out of a Sam Raimi movie, like, you know, you're hopefully going to get out of this one, and yeah, working with him was amazing, and he's a genius. So I don't know. I'm excited for everybody to see it.
Love that.
Nothing of any substance in that answer, by the way.
Well, I was going to ask you, because my wife and I actually recently have been watching through the Evil Dead films.
Yeah.
Cause you know, I was raised on the Raimi Spider-Mans in terms of superhero films there. And I just kind of missed the boat on the Evil Dead stuff.
Yep.
But those are so fun. And I know that even before Raimi was on the new Doctor Strange film, there had been talks of it kind of veering more into the horror world. Huh. And so all of that has kind of gotten me super excited to see what the blend of his worlds could look like.
Let's here. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that's obviously something that Scott Derrickson, the director of the first movie, does so well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it obviously that influence, you feel it even in the first one, even though it's not a horror movie, there is sure. like this sort of spookiness mm-hmm. throughout it. That's part of what makes that movie work so well and everything. And mm-hmm. so when we came onto this one, you know, I felt so fortunate for the work he'd done on the first one, the work that he and the previous writer on the second one, Jade Bartlett, that, you know, they'd done some work on the second one. And, and it's like, you dive in this case, COVID just gave me and Sam more time to make it our own thing. And we, you know, it's cool. I'm glad that there was the chance to maybe push it in a slightly scarier direction, just because Sam does that so well.
I like that little smirk. Now, if you're not watching, that little smirk is all I needed for the tease.
Yeah, that's okay, what I there you go. Yeah, Michael Waldron smirks.
2021.
There's the new headline. Yeah. Well, Michael, we're super excited about Multiverse of Madness, and more immediately, really excited to see where Loki goes. And so hopefully after we've gotten all the spoilers out of the way, we can have you back on.
Yeah, man, you can tell me how I ruin the MCU. That's fine. We'll hash it out.
There you go. Well, thanks for being on. Much.
Cool. Thank y'all.
Appreciate you. Man, every time we do one of these interviews, I just have so much fun. But it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to hear it's from fun. Like a show creator of the show you're talking about. Man, I mean, that's next level.
I mean, especially this show, because it's so creative. Like, it's such an interesting addition to the MCU. And just to, like, I really appreciated what Michael said, because I've had conversations like this with friends of mine, especially friends of mine that aren't necessarily diehard MCU fans, but they're the folks that kind of show up for what they perceive to be the like really interesting kind of cutting edge MCU moments. And so there were people, for instance, that were really into WandaVision, kind of faded on Falcon Winter Soldier. And for Michael Waldron to say like he wanted to make a show that pushed the MCU forward, but also was just like prestige, like kind of must-see television, I feel like we're feeling that. And to be able to talk to the folks kind of masterminding that is such a treat.
And we got a little Doctor Strange teaser
did.
In there.
Yeah, we
I
did.
I mean, just if you weren't excited before, you should be excited now. You know, when you hear these people talk, you're like, okay, I am thankful that this guy is going to be a big figure going forward.
Right.
That's what I love. It seems like Kevin does an incredible job of choosing those people. That's how I felt when I saw the Russo brothers direct the mm-hmm. movie for the first time. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, they're the ones that are going to get to do Civil War and Infinity War and Endgame? Perfect.
Right.
Thank you for putting your trust in the right people. And now I feel that way with certain people along the way here, including Michael Waldron.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we've talked so much about Marcus and McFeely because for both
them
of us.
Too.
Yeah, I mean, like those are creators that, like,
you know, for me, one of my favorite MCU films in terms of those that aren't necessarily always renowned is Captain America, the First Avenger. Like I really connect with those writers and what they do. And one of the things I liked is that they got the opportunity to play in various areas to where they kind of got a sense of the MCU as a whole. And you and I have talked about how, yeah, the fact that Kevin is sort of introducing Waldron into Loki and then Doctor Strange, he's kind of joining pretty quickly a small crew of writers that have gotten to work on multiple MCU films. Like, that's not a very large group in terms of people that have stuck right. around. And so it might, yeah, I mean, we might be seeing kind of the beginning of the next kind of writer phase here. I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to be Waldron here on out, but I think that it's fun to see someone that's clearly in it for the long haul.
Right. Man, it's absolutely crazy that we are already one third of the way through Loki. I can already tell this is going to be one of those shows where I'm not going to want it to end. We're going to get to the end. I'm going to be like, oh man, I could have used six more episodes of that.
Well, and this is one where, unlike WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, there seems to be a good chance that a season two is in the works, which kind of creates a different vibe as we're looking towards the end of this series.
Does the multiverse stay open? Does Loki end up in the TVA permanently, and that's where he works? Who knows? Lots going on, dude.
Lot to consider.
This is so much fun. We're just literally getting started.
Yep.
If you're just finding this podcast, here's how you can support us, okay? Follow us or subscribe to Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, okay?
Love that.
Get
that's it there. Great.
Absolutely. Listen to it. Share it with your friends. Share it on social media. You can always tag us at the FFW Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. If you send us messages on there, we try to respond to those. So hit us up there. If you want even more in-depth theories and you want to connect with our greater Friends from Work community, join our Slack channel. The link to join the Slack channel is in these show notes right below here. So go click on that. I think you might like it. There's different threads where you can like converse with other listeners. And some of our listeners have some pretty great ideas.
Yeah.
So you might enjoy meeting them.
We say this a lot, but I really mean this, and I don't think that other podcasts, I just don't believe other podcasts can beat us on this front. Like, we have such a great crew of listeners, legitimately, and we've been so excited to launch that Slack because we just wanted everyone to get to engage, and it's been so fun to see it work so well. Like, I think people are really enjoying it, and so if you are just looking for people to kind of geek out with about these shows, or about just MCU stuff in general, I really think that you'll enjoy the Slack community. So follow that link there in the show notes.
We're blowing up the ways that you guys can stay in touch with us. Are you kidding? Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Slack, YouTube, and we have a website, thefwpodcast.com, where you can message us through there and get your Friends from Work t-shirt. We ran out of some of the sizes, so if you went there and tried to buy an extra large or a double X and it said we were out, I got some more in stock.
Nice.
So I can now send those to you, okay? thefwpodcast.com/shop. Buy your shirt. Support the podcast. It means the world to us, and it allows Robbie and I to keep opening more doors, having more opportunities, and getting more conversations like the one we just had with Michael Waldron. Thank you guys so much for all of your support and for listening all these years. Welcome if you're just finding us, and we'll see you next time for a big episode on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
What?
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.